So this is what is officially on paper, while the US has historically shown that it sanctions with one hand and negotiates with the other. One example is that they announced that they want to impose the biggest and toughest sanctions in history against Russia. Now, on the other hand, as a result of this action, the growth of Russia's GDP is higher than that of the European Union, which said it wanted to finish Russia's work. On the other hand, the oil and gas that reaches Europe, which they said can no longer come from Russia, still comes from Russia. It just happens that it goes through other countries, and because of that, they charge you more. So you have the same oil as before, just a little less volume, and you're paying a lot more money for it than before. And you're no longer dependent on one country, but three or four. And of course, the gas that you are going to get from the US, the US liquefied natural gas, the amount is very small and not enough for Europe at all. And the price is much more expensive than what Russia was giving you. So what a smart person at the center of the unipolar imperial decision-making apparatus would adopt such a stupid strategy.
Cuarto decisional del imperio unipolar decide semejante estrategia idiota.
Una estrategia idiota, como dices tú, Fabricio. De cualquier manera,
a stupid strategy, as you said, Fabricio. Fortunately, countries have been able to industrialize and ensure their own food security and develop in this direction. This is one of the consequences of sanctions. This is a very complicated matter. On the other hand, there is a very interesting phenomenon, which is the coordination, unity and cooperation between the embargoed countries, which is a kind of resistance and building a different environment.
Que también es una forma de resistencia y de construir un espacio distinto. Mira.
Look, the nations of the sanctioned countries use their intelligence to make fun of many, or in fact all, sanctions. I remember when I was in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, they definitely made fun of some of the sanctions. As I remember that in the period of socialist Albania, in the period between 1976 and 1986, there were large companies producing textile products, and all of their products ended up in the market with the label Made in Italy.
Telares, mucho. Y todos, al final salían al mercado y estaban en el mercado con la etiqueta Made in Italia.
This means that nations have the ability to overcome sanctions and blockades in any way. What experience do you have of dealing with and passing behind sanctions?
Para superarlos. ¿Qué experiencia tú ves aquí en el desarrollo desde los pueblos para enfrentar y superar estas sanciones?
La cuestión es incrementar.
The issue is a significant increase in development of South-South relations. South-South relations should take the place of North. Today it is much easier to exchange products with any other country than it was 20 years ago. Every country can achieve a level of production of products and services. The policy of imperialism is stupid because they don't take into account that in the past, until about 50 to 20 years ago, resources were exchanged with technology and its improvements. Today, the owners of resources no longer need new technologies. Because firstly, some countries have very, very advanced technology. And secondly, if the technology doesn't reach them, there are countries that are willing to give the technology, for example, China, Russia, and Brazil itself. So what is the threat where the logic of exchange prevails? When you pay the price of my product at the international market, and if you want, you cannot do the exchange, the idea of you sanctioning me is stupid. You see, they sanctioned the Russian oil and gas pipeline to Europe and wanted to prevent Russian gas from reaching Europe. But what happened was that gas flows from Turkey and Azerbaijan and then returns here. What did Russia do? It used to have a strong trading partner, the European Union, and specifically Germany and two lines that transported oil and gas quickly and directly. For political reasons, he sold gas at a very low price. Today, it sells this gas at a relatively higher price to India and China and to other countries such as Pakistan, countries that did not buy it before. Russia started diversifying its customers and therefore has many more customers than before and is much less dependent on one customer only.
Al diversificar la cartera, a tener mucho más gente que te compra, tener mucha menos dependencia de cualquiera de ellos.
La realidad actual donde se comienza a negociar.
Today's reality is that countries are starting to do business with their own national currencies. India works with rupees, Russia with rubles, China with yuan, etc. Today, therefore, the dollar is not very decisive. How does this approach affect the possibility of circumventing or neutralizing sanctions?
En la posibilidad de sortear o burlar las sanciones.
Mira, hermano, en una forma muy fácil, es un desastre para Estados Unidos.
Look, brother, this is very easy. It's a disaster for America, because thanks to the dollar, as the only player in international exchange, America was given the ability and power in international trade to determine who sells what and who buys what and the terms of payment. And this way, it earns billions of dollars per day per transaction. This situation is not going to continue now. The dollar will no longer be the only medium of exchange. According to the predictions made, in a 10-year period, the dollar will probably not be the first currency. Why? Because, as always, there's a proverb that says, idiots, in addition to being stupid, also become blind. When the U.S. tried to sanction Russia, it made it impossible for Russia to access the dollar market and the Russian account was blocked, like what they did with Venezuela in the past. Most of the countries in the international level have resources abroad for emergencies that can happen. Now, almost all strategic reserves have been in dollars. Now, there are many countries that say, if I ever get into a conflict with America for any reason, America will stop me and take all my reserves from me. No, it is better not to do this. And they are de-dollarizing their reserves. There are many countries that willingly de-dollarize their resources gradually without creating a monetary shock. And many more countries are planning to do this. Having less dollars means having less demand for dollars. Less demand for dollars means less production of dollars. Less production of dollars means that the U.S. debt cannot be paid.
Por la deuda de los Estados Unidos, la cara de impagable.
Gracias, Fabrizio. Desgraciadamente.
Thank you, Fabrizio. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of the program. Thank you very much for your participation. This is Black and White.
Muchas gracias.
De nada. Adiós.
Adiós.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض.
Peace be upon you, all trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. This is To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. It's great to have all of you here, and today we want to talk about a character who not only influenced Muslims across the world, but influenced many non-Muslims as well. This great personality is the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him. Imam Ali alayhi salam was brought up under the care of the Holy Prophet Muhammad when he was just a small child. And so in this manner, the foundation of the moral and spiritual education of this magnificently intelligent child was based by the Prophet of Islam himself, the greatest educator of all mankind. Imam Ali's mental faculties were to an extent that he believed in the Holy Prophet and his mission at the tender age of 8. Therefore, Imam Ali, contrary to the other companions of the Holy Prophet, had never worshipped idols and never partook in the unreasonable demands, the oppressive actions, or the unjust acts of the Arab chieftains.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's To My Brother, and we're discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salam. So, dear friends, again, we are in the holy month of Ramadan, this beautiful month, with some trials and some difficulties and some hardships. But a month which, very humbly, I believe, that anybody who is not able to witness this holy month is very, I guess, envious of those who are able to witness this holy month, and to be able to fulfill the rights and responsibilities and duties that we are capable of in this holy month of Ramadan. So we're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. We find, of course, that one of the traits and characteristics of Imam Ali alayhi salam is this idea that he was an individual who was smiling. His face was very soft, approachable, if you will. And these are things that we find, you know, historically, and extrapolate based upon the various traditions that we find in which the imams talk about having a cheerful face and smiling. So these are kind of things that are important. Sometimes we think that the imams were always frowning, or they had this mean face and they were walking around town, you know, with their eyebrows scrunched, when the reality is very different. These were individuals that they were so beautiful, and their faces were so illuminated that they would glow while they walked in the streets, and they were approachable, and their faces were soft. They weren't hard like tyrants or oppressors or criminals or, you know, gangsters and thugs and these kind of people. We find they had very soft faces and they were very approachable. People wanted to come and speak to them. People wanted to know who these individuals were. So that's one aspect we find of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And it's interesting that he talks about this even in his various statements. He says that cheerfulness is on the believer's face. You can see that the believer is very serene, tranquil, at peace. And this is something that I think is really important, even though there's other characteristics that I wanted to talk about, but, you know, running out of time. So I guess we'll just stop at this idea here. You know, many times, yes, we have problems in our lives. We have difficulties. You know, we're dealing with a lot of stuff on a daily basis. But that should never prevent us from carrying ourselves in a serene manner, in a tranquil, peaceful manner, in a cheerful manner, you know? Sometimes we're so caught up in our own lives that we forget that perhaps other people have problems as well. I mean, we forget that maybe other people are suffering, other people are sad. And so when you realize that perhaps other people are sad as well, and this is where the point comes into play, when you are cheerful, despite having your own problems, when you smile at others, despite having your own problems, you bring happiness to another individual
who is most probably also facing trials and difficulties and hardships and is also sad. So you bring them happiness, and in return, what will happen? They will smile back at you, they will be cheerful, and they will bring you happiness as well. Just one last point, even though we're probably out of time, and that's that being cheerful and being happy does not mean being kind of crazy and exhilarated and, you know, laughing out loud. And a very serene, peaceful, calm cheerfulness is what is being said. A beautiful lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Aminullah along with its English translations. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma fastajib du'ayi واقبل ثناي واجمع بيني وبين أوليائك بحق محمد.
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God, my Master and my Lord. Welcome my friends, keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the fully, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
إِنَّكَ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ.
And now we invite you to listen to Fayyaz Ja'far.
This is why Allama Majlisi in Bahar al-Anwar, he states that submission or ma'rifa of the Imams of Ahlul Bayt is that tomorrow, for instance, that if Imam Sahib al-Zaman, he comes into this masjid, and he stands in front of every single one of us, and he tells you, look at this apple. The right side of the apple is halal, and the left side of the apple is haram. That it's the responsibility of every single one of us to submit toward it unconditionally. Don't say, but how is the right side halal and the other side haram when they're part of one dimension in its entirety? No. Ma'rifa, absolute knowledge of the Imams of Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salatu wasalam, is to submit unconditionally, that if the Imam tells you, put your sword away, you put your sword away. That this side of the apple is halal and the other side is haram, that's it, it's finished. And what made Malik al-Ashtar the recipient of such divine knowledge from Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, was this love, was this loyalty, was recognizing the wilaya of Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen in all of its unique capacities. The historians, they write that when Imam Ali alayhi salam is now the governor, or he's the fourth caliph, and he establishes his government in the holy city of Kufa, his first governor of Egypt was his adopted son, Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr. But due to the onslaught of Muawiyah from Damascus and his attempts toward overtaking the region of Egypt where Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr ruled, Imam Ali alayhi salam thought that he would make a strategic move toward placing Malik al-Ashtar, who was really smart, who was really chivalrous, who had a lot of bravery. But most importantly, he had a large army ready behind him to protect Egypt from any sort of onslaught from Muawiyah. So he writes a letter toward Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr, relieving him of his duty. And then he goes towards sending Malik al-Ashtar toward Egypt so that he's able to take over the governorship of that region of his caliphate. What happened was that Malik al-Ashtar, on his way toward going toward Egypt, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam writes toward him this famous letter, letter 52 or letter 53 of Nahj al-Balagha, that many of us are obviously very familiar with. Malik al-Ashtar takes the letter, he goes toward Egypt, and when news began to spread in Damascus that Malik al-Ashtar is going to become the governor of Egypt, and at the same time he's going to bring forth his large army contingency, Muawiyah began to have a little bit of fear. So Amr ibn al-As goes toward Muawiyah. Of course, Amr ibn al-As, the close confidant of Muawiyah. He goes toward him and he says, hey, if we allow for Malik al-Ashtar to go toward establishing the governorship of Egypt, we're going to be in trouble. So they create a ploy, they make a system that on the journey between Kufa and Egypt, many people back in the day, they take a lot of rest stops, right? Like today, for instance, if I'm driving from New York City toward Toronto, it's like an 8-10 hour drive. Every couple of hours, I need to stop, I need to get some coffee, I need to use the restroom, I need to compare Tim Hortons toward Dunkin' Donuts and all of those sorts of things. And you take his rest and you spend some time there. Back in that day, they would go and they would sleep in tents, they would park their camels and their horses, and there would be people who would sell and distribute food and so on and so forth. Amr ibn al-As, he pays somebody in this journey between Kufa and Egypt, and he says, when you see Malik al-Ashtar come with his big contingency of followers and his army and his military personnel, give him this food mixed with this poison so that he's unable to reach Egypt. And in the outskirts of the city of Cairo, we come and we see that Malik al-Ashtar was poisoned and he was killed, and he was never able to act upon the instructions given toward him by Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. But nonetheless, those words of the Commander of the Faithful live forever in reality.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio. علي حبه جنة قسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة. The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons
letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge with Sheikh Mukhtar on IRIB English Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of a guide for managers. We are basing our discussions on the 151st sermon of Nahjul Balagha, where Imam Ali alayhi salam warns about certain tests and calamities. And the actual reason behind these calamities is being too much engrossed and too much involved and overwhelmed by blessings, like to overly focus on them and just be drunken because of those blessings. And then he goes on to say that as a result of these, this state where a person is, kind of drunk in those blessings, he will not be able to protect himself. He'll make some mistakes, okay? They'll not be careful. Their foresight will reduce. And all of these difficulties that he mentions. Because of the mistake, certain punishments might come. So be careful from first. Don't make those mistakes. وَتَثَبَّتُ فِي قَتَامِ الْعِشْوَةِ He says that be careful and be firm and steadfast and stick to the path when there are confusions that are facing you in the society, in the social dimension. This is also something that is important to keep in mind.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam, when he talks about this issue of confusion and to stay firm in the state of confusion, it's very important for us to be careful about this issue. Why do I say so? It's because many times these confusions come. And what do you do in this state? I'll give you a simple example. When you are, for example, driving, okay, sometimes it becomes very foggy, very foggy. And there's thick fog everywhere. In this situation, what you need to do is that you need to slow down a bit. And with the little visibility that you have, you stick to that path that you know definitely is correct. Isn't it? Like with that little visibility, even if it's 10 centimeters visibility or even let's say 40 centimeters of visibility, you can see the road ahead of you, isn't it? With that little visibility, you keep and stay focused and move slowly and surely in the direction. And as the road begins to turn, very slightly, in within that 10 centimeters, you can notice that the road is going to a slight turn and you can turn with the road. Or if there's any kind of impediment ahead, if you're going slowly and surely, you'll be able to see the impediment and stop in time. But if you decide not to focus on those issues that are firm, those that are clear, and get engrossed in other issues that are, you can say, that are branch issues, not the actual root issues, that are offshoots. If you start to focus on those offshoots, you will never be able to achieve your destination. So, for example, as you are driving, instead of focusing on the 10 centimeter visibility, you start to look ahead. If you start to look ahead, you will not be able to see anything. It's a fog. Once in a while, you'll see a light. So once in a while, the fog will open and you'll see something like a tree. But you don't know what it is. It's always confused. You might make some interpretations. Like you might say and interpret, no, there is the path goes ahead for another 10 meters and you start to speed up. You know, you can make a mistake. You can bang. You can cause accidents. But instead, if you focus on the path that you already know very clearly, you will be able to pass through the whole impediment and the whole detrimental situation very easily. If a person focuses on this example, this really summarizes the whole thing that Imam Ali alayhi salam is trying to tell us here. Allahumma salli ala
Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Nahjul Balagha, translated as the Peak of Eloquence, is a compilation of sermons, letters, and sayings that reflected Imam Ali's profound insights on governance, ethics, spirituality, and social justice. Sayyid Razi's meticulous work in preserving and presenting Imam Ali's words has made Nahjul Balagha a timeless source of inspiration for scholars, theologians, and seekers of wisdom.
Now, adding on to that, now, if you look at the statement of Imam Ali Islam, it has a similarity to what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Holy Quran, where he says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم والذي أنزل عليك الكتاب منه آيات محكمات. He is the one who revealed the book. From amongst the verses, there are verses that are muhkam, that are firm, that are clear in their indication. They are the mother of the book. They are the core or the main part of the book. Hunna ummul kitab wa ukharu mutashabihat. And there are others that are mutashabih. Other verses are their indication or their signification is not clear, right? فَأَمَّا الَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ زَيْغٌ. Those whose hearts have a deviation, فَيَتَّبِعُونَ مَا تَشَابَهَ مِنْهُ. They follow those confusing elements of the book. Those books, those elements that are not very clear, those meanings that are not completely clear, and they follow the ambiguities. That means in that ambiguous situation, you can interpret what you want and decide to do what you feel is correct. Those who have deviations in their heart, they do that. ابتغاء الفتنة وابتغاء التأويل. Why do they do this? Because they want to cause fitna, they want to cause confusion, they want to cause problems. وَابْتِغَاءَتْ أَوِيلِ. And they are looking for making different types of interpretations to fit their whims. وَمَا يَعْلَمُ تَأَوِيلَهُ إِلَّا اللَّهُ وَالرَّاسِخُونَ فِي الْعِلْمِ. Only Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows their meanings, and the رَاسِخُونَ فِي الْعِلْمِ, those that are firm in their knowledge. Now, here see, when we are told about the muhkam verses and the mutashabih verses, or the ambiguous verses and the clear verses, whenever you are confused about the ambiguous verses, you need to refer and revert them back to the firm verses and the clear verses. If you refer them back to the clear verses, the indication that those confusing verses or those verses that are a little bit, their indication is not clear, will become clear under the light of those clear verses. Inshallah, we shall delve on this discussion in the near future. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar in the program Gate of Knowledge on RIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Two men.
Yani?
Bazaar.
Whether man-made or not, food can have fascinating backstories. Products usually take a long journey before they end up on the dining table. Nevertheless, the food industry follows several golden rules that have helped it steadily grow over time. The most important of these is continuous product innovation and improved production processes to reduce costs and wastage. Others involve packaging and product accessibility, but probably the king of all rules is the taste that drives the food industry.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly program that analyzes markets, profits, industries, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will be exploring the food industry and its related agricultural markets. We wanted to see how the food sector has expanded over the years and what companies are doing to increase their profits. So, let's check out the Tasty Grub.
To become more familiar with how much work goes into food production, we visited Golha Food Industries. It was established nearly a century ago, and its products are now a household name. It produces hundreds of items in seven categories, such as dried legumes and fruit, spices and canned products. It also takes great pride in its healthy product line, including gluten-free flour products. This producer has devoted a lot of attention to the packaging of its products. Due to its diverse product list, it purchases such materials as cans, plastic, and cardboard to design the appropriate type of storage systems for distribution. The company has a massive daily output due to its expansive production facilities. Most of the work is done by automated machines, but the fine details are handled by experienced staff. All production processes start when raw material enters the company. These materials are first tested for quality before hitting the production floors, most of which are domestically supplied. After being tested, the material is sent to various closed circuit machines for processing. Then it is time for sorting and more quality control tests before packaging.
Food production is a very sensitive process requiring many checks and controls that guarantee the final product is safe for consumption. And production machines play an essential role as they reduce errors and maintain constant output results.
Plus, many of these machines have been domestically engineered, whereas they were previously imported at high prices.
This company has a highly equipped quality control and research and development lab. It's where many new products are created and food safety standards are controlled. Moreover, the staff in this department implement food sciences to make innovative products. It might be interesting to know that this department also has some of the best food tasters. This producer has been awarded Best Research and Development Department in Food Production for many consecutive years. Among its many achievements, it has also been awarded the certificate of favored brand by customers. This wouldn't be possible without adhering to strict national and international food safety and production management standards. Following such standards has helped it maintain its export share in the global food market. With years of experience, this company has grown such that it provides thousands of employment opportunities, both directly and indirectly. It also has thousands of agencies and stores all over the country. Plus, its products can also be purchased online. As part of its future vision, this company is looking to increase its market share both domestically and abroad. It also has long-term plans to increase production and improve the production process for efficiency.
The Iranian food industry has taken giant strides away from its traditional production methods. Industry participants say using food sciences and new technologies has helped the food industry grow faster than before. Never more than now has food been more accessible. In fact, it only requires a touch of a few buttons to receive it at home. Therefore, food packaging is a critical part of the production.
Over the last decade, there has been a great emphasis on developing packaging for the food industry. This is because Iran indigenized many machines needed to process and produce food items such as deli meats, beverages, pickles, and so much more. Proper packaging also increases shelf life, which is important for consumers. Previously, food items such as spices and dairy products were purchased bulk from customers abroad due to a lack of packaging. While exporting items in bulk has benefits, it's not as profitable as selling prepackaged foodstuff. So, in addition to adding value to raw products such as meat, companies have also designed attractive packaging to contain food in more manageable portions. Such a strategy increases not only product quality, but also food safety, which helps producers meet international export standards. This trend also helps companies with branding and has created job opportunities for designers.
As you probably already know, the food industry is heavily dependent on production in the agriculture sector. So it's no surprise that the agriculture sector holds the pulse of national food security and food exports. Plus, it is one of the only sectors that has been barely impacted by the US-imposed sanctions and the global coronavirus outbreak. That was horrible.
We looked at some figures from the Ministry of Agriculture to see how this sector is doing. Last year, around 6 million tons of agricultural and foodstuff products were exported. Trade of these products raked in roughly $4 billion. Pistachio, saffron, and confectionery products topped the export charts in value during that period. Other agriculture sectors, such as livestock, poultry, and aquaculture, have also generated millions of dollars in exports. Last year, nearly 450,000 tons of these items were sent to markets in neighboring regions worth $500 million. Agriculture accounts for 8% of the country's gross domestic product. It might be interesting to know that around half of Iran's total non-oil trade comes from this sector. That's all based on data from Iran's Ministry of Agriculture. According to Iran's Customs Administration, the total non-oil trade value rose nearly 40% last year. over 120 million tons of non-oil products worth $72 billion were traded with other countries in that period. Meanwhile, the government has implemented measures to encourage the development of agriculture. One trend this sector is witnessing is the application of smart technologies for the cultivation and harvest of various products. There has also been a boom in developing greenhouses and green practices to preserve natural resources. The word plastic was initially used to describe pliable and easily shaped objects. However, it only recently became a name for a category of materials called polymers. Such materials are abundant in nature. Take cellulose, for example. It's the material that makes up the cell walls of plants. However, synthetic polymers are a more recent invention of the last 150 years. These come from the plentiful carbon atoms found in fossil fuels. Since then, they have become an integral part of the industry, technology, and even various sciences. We will explore Iran's plastic and polymer productions. We will also check out some of its downstream markets and their contributions to the national economy. These days, we use more plastic than ever before. It's terrible. So where does this material come from? And what goes into making this stuff? Let's find out. Our quest for answers led us to a company specializing in making various polymer products. Parsa Polymer Sharif was established some 20 years ago and is a knowledge-based company that was born in the research department of the University of Sharif. As a leading advanced polymer compound manufacturer, it makes various products essential to everyday living. It produces compounds based on commodity thermoplastic resins like PP, PE, and the famous PET, or PET. It also engineers resins like PVC and so much more. This knowledge-based company is a major supplier of raw materials to many industries. Some include original equipment manufacturers in the automotive market and PVC pipe producers in the construction industry. Over the years, this company has helped Iran save millions on products that would otherwise be imported. This firm has three main functions: research and development, innovation center, and production. It also has a brand new line for researching and producing biodegradable polymers for the packaging industry. Most of the raw materials needed for production are domestically purchased. When this stuff enters the company, it is first tested and graded based on its quality. Then, according to its intended use, the raw material is formulated and sent to machines for production.
Machines used in the polymer industry utilizes some of the most advanced machinery for production. The extruder is one of the most commonly used machines. They play a central role in plastic production. Extruder lines are the largest converters of plastics worldwide. Some of these machines can be domestically manufactured while others are still imported.
Its products are all tested in its well-equipped research and development lab. The various granules and resin compounds undergo over a dozen tests while being analyzed for quality here. Also, new product formulas are created in this highly technical research and development department. Through these facilities, the company is expanding its product portfolio. Products made here are produced along the lines of exports. So, national and international quality standards are implemented during the production processes. This means the quality of products found here doesn't just match international standards, they go beyond the quality of competing foreign brands in the international arena. The headquarters of this company is located in Sharif University Advanced Technologies Incubator. Owing to this, it has strong relations and collaborations with the scientific community. It has also been awarded for its contributions to the scientific and industrial sectors over the past years. This knowledge-based company also exports its products. The company has a unique future vision strongly intertwined with sustainable business development. This is partly due to its forward thinking and social and environmental responsibility outlook.
Now, polymers are the primary materials that build many other products. Plastic items have different polymer formulations depending on their application. The majority of polymers made in Iran are domestically consumed. Some of its biggest customers are in the construction sector. Also, plastic is extensively used in the medical industry and transportation.
Almost everything around us is either made of plastic or has some plastic component. Moreover, plastic has played a central role in the development of the medical industry over the past 60 years. These materials are used to create hemodialysis machines, disposable needles, IV drips, and testing equipment vital to modern medicine. Plastics have also had a considerable impact on developing high-quality prosthetics. The National Medical Device Directorate estimates that Iran's share in the global medical device market will reach well over $7 billion in the next 3 years. PVC materials are also largely used in Iran's construction industry. For example, Iran's Doors and Windows Manufacturers Association estimates the domestic demand for PVC doors and windows is around 35,000 tons annually. This is partly due to the current residential construction boom in the country. The home appliance industry is also another mammoth customer of the polymer industry. Based on figures from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, Iran has doubled its production in this sector over the last 3 years. In 2021, around 15 million home appliance units were produced, with exports soaring to roughly $140 million. So, polymer production is key in expanding many manufacturing industries, which have raked in large amounts of foreign revenue for the country.
Well, I believe it is that time of the show where I should take a little break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague out there on the field. Take it away.
Despite all the advancements in technology and the problems it has solved, food security is one it hasn't. In fact, it is becoming more and more of an issue beyond the countries that have always been grappling with it. One solution is to, well, end inflation and the global economic crisis, but that's hardly a solution. There's no end in sight with that. But another way is to use technology to make things more efficient. We wouldn't be needing more land because we're not getting it thanks to desertification of more and more land. We also wouldn't be needing more water because we're also not getting it, also thanks to desertification. We would actually need less of both if only we could manage our resources better.
Iran has some potential for farming and agriculture, and that's a massive understatement if you've ever heard one. But we could definitely do with some improvements, some innovations in the field, especially with irrigation, because, well, we've been experiencing some drought and some water shortages a little bit more than what climate change would warrant. And that's why we're here to check out a smart greenhouse that believes has the answer, the shakeup that the industry needs to be a lot more efficient, especially with water, plus some extra goodies. So stay tuned to this episode of The Bazaar to check out what they've been able to come up with.
About that efficiency, greenhouses can help provide that by creating a controlled environment that, while it could be much smaller than a field, it can yield higher quality produce and more produce per acre. Greenhouses can protect the crops and vegetables from extreme weather conditions, pests, or really any other external threat. The parameters that are controlled in a greenhouse are light, ventilation, humidity, and temperature. This would allow the farmers to create the kind of optimal micro-ecosystem that would eventually lead to them growing healthier, tastier, more nutritious, and, you know, better-looking produce.
What you will find in this smart greenhouse are tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, bell pepper, and cucumbers. There are certain types of
fruits and vegetables that are preferred to be used in greenhouses, for example, the ones that I just mentioned. And there are certain types of crops that are not optimal for greenhouse use, for example, wheat and rice. So, but that's just some information about greenhouses in general. What makes this particular greenhouse unique and smart is that all of the parameters that need to be kept in check in a greenhouse are all monitored and manipulated remotely through the cloud and Internet of Things, instead of some worker or some farmers coming in and out of the greenhouse to manipulate things manually. That's the smart aspect of it in a nutshell. But to find out more information about the smartness of this greenhouse, let's hear from some of the experts here.
In this greenhouse, we measure all essential parameters for the plants, like temperature, moisture, CO2, ambient light, the water parameters, and the moisture of the roots, using the available sensors and control them with the actuators and the smart control unit, and also remotely control it via Internet of Things. With properly controlling the climate and the irrigation system, we increase the productivity up to 30% and decrease the water consumption by up to 40% comparing other hydroponic greenhouses in our country. And in the next step, we are trying to recycle the drained water of the irrigation system and pass it through some filters and put it back again into the irrigation system in order to further decrease the water consumption. And also, we are developing a robotic harvester, including a mobile-based manipulator, soft gripper, and vision system equipped with artificial intelligent algorithm in order to detect the ripe crops and pick them in the proper time.
1% of the world's water resources are fresh water, and most of it, in fact, 70% of it, is used in agriculture. What we choose to do with that tiny, finite reserve is a responsibility that we need to bear. Greenhouses can control the irrigation of plants. You may have sophisticated plumbing systems in the ground or in the cocopeats, as you will see, to prevent overwatering, which can promote rots and fungal diseases, and reduce evaporation, saving huge amounts of water in the process. There is even the option to recycle the runoff water and put it back into the system to further save up on water. The great thing about this particular smart greenhouse is that you don't need to be born into a farmer family that has thousands of acres of land to make this a viable option to you. You can own land as small as 100 square meters and it would still be a financially viable option for you. Especially since after the initial installation phase and the setup process, you won't be needing much manpower to control the environment.
Interest has been shown in this smart greenhouse by certain countries, especially in Africa, such as Kenya, Niger, and Ethiopia. The idea, and of course the working proof of the idea, really has the potential to shake up the industry. And if it catches on, it can only mean good things for the farmers and the food sector in general. Thank you for staying tuned to another episode of Bazaar.
Many thanks for that wonderful report. Well, that brings us to the end of our show today. I've been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Dr. Shomali.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah al-aliyyil azim. Today is The first day of spring is Nowruz. I congratulate all who know and appreciate Nowruz. May this be a very blessed year for all of you and all mankind, inshallah. I thought I should continue our reflections on the sermon of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam.